Coming up today, it's hot, so we answered the question on everyone's lips, why the heck are none of the trains working? We uncover the mystery of the flatworm that self-injects sperm into its own head, and Apple Music is out, along with global radio station Beats One. But is it any good? All that and more coming up. Wired.co.uk podcast, your weekly guide to the important and the interesting, from science and tech to terrifying evolution and AI chatbots. I'm your host, Liat Clark, and I'm deputy editor of Wired.co.uk.
And I'm James Templeton.
And we're missing Katie and Michael today.
Michael is with the Wombles at Wimbledon, watching some tennis. And Katie is just behind this wall.
She's just lurking, listening, wishing she was here.
I hope she's not listening.
No, she's not. So Katie will make an appearance later in the podcast, having a little tete-a-tete with Jeremy White, our product editor.
About the new issue.
Yes, about the gear section in the new issue.
Simon Pegg on the front cover.
A very brightly coloured front cover.
Yeah, he's helped us to test out all of our favourite technology. Well, pretty much everything. There's everything from slippers to drones.
I'd love to see Simon Pegg testing out those slippers. I don't think he did.
No, probably not.
But we're going to be hearing from Ollie Franklin later in the show, talking about his interview with Simon Pegg. He's also going to give us a little bit of a preview of Terminator and whether or not we should watch it or not. He watched it the other night.
Arnie fights Arnie.
It can only be amazing then, surely.
Possibly.
Ollie's face did not agree. Anyway, let's get on with the news. James, it's been really hot this week. We can't avoid it. We're just going to have to talk about it.
We are. It was so hot yesterday, and I'm sure everyone has one of these it was so hot stories. It was so hot yesterday that all the fridges in my local Tesco's were broken.
Oh my gosh.
And there was no ice cream left. Absolutely none.
That's an epic too hot story.
It was like a very middle class disaster film.
I don't know about middle class.
There was no Iberico ham.
Everyone
I couldn't buy any
ice
Ben and Jerry's, so
okay,
it was just terrible.
You've upped it there, then.
Anyway, a bigger problem were the trains. So if you're a railway, apparently, there is such a thing as the wrong kind of heat, or at least way too much of it.
We've heard a lot about this, haven't we, over the years?
Yes.
The wrong kind of heat.
Every 10 years or so, when the UK decides to ratchet itself up to searing Spain in nice summer day-like temperatures, the trains tend to go wrong.
Mm.
And it doesn't take much to make our trains go wrong.
What? You found out. You investigated. You're also going to have to now take this on, you know, and be a special reporter on this. So when the wrong leaves are on the track.
See, I'm a bit of a train geek, so I have absolutely no problem with doing more research into trains.
Okay.
Because it's a hobby anyway. So, rails are made of steel. And when steel heats up, this is basic science, it expands. So what do you think happens when the weather gets very hot?
The tracks move.
Yeah, they expand.
They
so
warp.
Once the temperatures go over about 27 degrees, our railways start to hit a bit of a problem. And this problem is exacerbated by trains going too fast over rail. So what you'll have found this week is the railways were imposing speed limits or cancelling trains altogether. So if the trains don't pass over the tracks, then there's no pressure put on them and the buckled rails can kind of come back to their normal temperature and no damage is done. While the air temperature yesterday got up to about 35 degrees in southwest London, the temperature of the tracks will have exceeded 50 degrees.
Okay, that's
and at those
pretty
sort
hot.
Of temperatures, they're very, very hot and they can buckle. Now, this problem is exacerbated by the fact that our railways are quite old and not necessarily in the best of nick.
What?
I know, right? But to stop railways from buckling, Shocking. What tends to happen is a hydraulic machine, when the railways are laid, will go in and artificially stretch the rails.
What?
As they are placed.
Stretches as they're placed, so not, this isn't maintenance. This
no,
is when
I don't think so. So when
rails.
The railways are put down, they'll stretch them. So if you imagine a railway has a piece of steel has a certain amount of give, so they stretch it to a certain limit of its give, and that means that when it gets hot, it can't expand. It's already expanded, if you like. But the problem is you can't stretch it too much, because when it gets too cold, as the UK can also do, the railway risks cracking.
Cripes. So stretch it just the right amount.
So you have to stretch it just the right amount, and then you can also mitigate against buckling and warping railways by laying it on the right kind of high-quality ballast, making sure that it's well-maintained and that you've got the right kind of sensors to be able to monitor it. Obviously, other countries in the world experience these sort of temperatures for half
the
of the year or the whole year,
yeah.
And they have no problems.
So why do they have no problems? Much better?
Well, there'll be two things. One, in France, for example, their high-speed railways are top-notch, state-of-the-art, and prepared for these sort of things. They've been laid in a way that means that they won't buckle, or it's very unlikely. Railways in maybe sub-Saharan Africa, which were laid hundreds, well, over 100 years ago, they run trains very, very slowly. What we've done is we started to run quick trains on very old tracks.
Yeah.
So were the trains to just run slowly, there wouldn't be so much of a problem, which is what happened yesterday, which was Wednesday.
Crimity. I wonder if Crossrail is going to not have these problems.
Well, it will be underground.
Not the whole thing.
No, some of it will be overground and yeah. some of it will be underground. That's true.
Yeah.
But yeah, a modern railway should be able to cope with these sort of things because it will have been laid in the right kind of way and with the latest technology.
Well, I'm going to play this back to you in 10 years' time when we find out that everyone's stuck on a crossworld rail train.
Getting
in the middle
very,
of another
very
heat
warm.
Wave. A 35-degree heat wave. Tell that to
that lasted
in
for one whole
the Middle
day.
East, where they're enjoying 55-degree temperatures right now.
Yes, how do they cope? Liat, microscopic transparent flatworm sperm injection.
Yeah, it's the buzzword of the week.
Everyone's talking about it.
Yeah. These pesky little creatures. I'm going to try and say their name. Macrostomum hystrix. There you go.
Done.
I mean, I don't know if it's right, but these little mites reside in freshwater. They have both male and female reproductive organs. So you might ask, why would such a creature go about stabbing itself in the head to self-inject sperm?
What?
That is the story. That is the story this week that I have covered. It was published in the Royal Proceedings Bee Journal.
So it's a remarkable kind of immaculate conception.
Yeah.
And quite a violent immaculate conception.
There's an awful lot of that in the natural world. We'll get onto that later. But so nobody has actually, I'm going to say first off, no one's witnessed this happen. No one's witnessed the point of insemination. But...
Well, it would scar you for life.
It would scar... That's possibly why the research team behind it decided not to take that approach. But this team from the University of Basel, think they found evidence that when the worm is, you know, lonely.
In the mood.
And at that age where, you know, thinks it should have kids, it will self-inject sperm into its head rather than wait for a mate.
It says here, using a needle-like stylet to carry out hypodermic insemination.
Yeah, it just sounds awful,
wonderful.
I know. It's actually a term that's very widely used when talking about these flatworms, hypodermic insemination. But just how they do this, how they go about this, and what they do when they're lonely has been a mystery until now. So the research team decided they would split up some flatworms, have some in a solo group, some in groups of three, and see what happened when they reached sexual maturity. After about 30 days, they decided to assess where the sperm was in the flatworms' bodies, as you would, naturally, and found strikingly different distributions of sperm. So the worms that were in groups of three, the majority of the sperm was located in their tail region, which appears to be very normal and seems to be just what they do when they're going to copulate, inject into the tail region, and the sperm will migrate to fertilise. However, the worms that were sadly on their own had an inordinate amount of sperm in their heads.
So why are lonely flatworms injecting themselves in the head with sperm?
Well, I'm guessing it's quite tricky to inject. I mean, I'm not sure where...
To inject yourself in the tail would be quite difficult.
I'm guessing the needle-like stylet is located at such a place that it's the easiest place to self-inject.
Horrible. Just horrible. Please carry on.
So they did do a little bit more testing to see if this conclusion was correct. They then took the groups that had been living in groups of three and isolated them. And the same thing happened after 6 days. They found higher amounts of sperm in the worms' heads. They also found offspring, little hatchlings, which seemed to confirm that the solo worms were in fact carrying out the immaculate conception.
And if I want to find out more about disgusting insect sex, you've spent quite a bit of time researching it.
I have, James. I think it's important. It's important for the world. Now, there are many instances of horrendous insect and invertebrate sexual practices. I mean, we shouldn't judge. This is natural. This is nature. This is evolution. But these are cases that have actually been documented, whereas this case here, they've got their suspicions that this is what's happening. But as I said, they haven't actually seen it happen. So it has to be taken with a little grain of salt until we know for sure. But there are many other practices, James, where spiders actually, they use something called a pedipalp to stab the female, and then they break off the pedipalp to act as a plug. They inject the sperm.
Lovely.
Break off their appendage, and it acts as a plug and keeps the sperm in.
It's really ingenious.
It really is. I mean, more people should try it. If you think you'd like to know more, there is an old story on the site called Bug Sex, the top 5 most bizarre invertebrate sexual practices for your pleasure.
It sounds like one of those amazingly trashy TV documentaries made up of talking heads and terrifying pictures of bugs.
There is actually a woman that specialises in this, exactly that niche market, James, in the
US. This is what academia is made for.
Sex.
A bug sex specialist.
I mean, it's just the gift that keeps on giving. I feel like every other week there's a new and horrifying story, which makes, you know, just makes you happy to be human.
So go read about bug sex on wired.co.uk and maybe get in touch with us, podcast@wired.co.uk, and let us know your favourite animal sexual practices. We'd love to hear them.
So James, Google did something quite interesting this week.
It does something interesting every week.
Yes,
it's the size of a small country.
This could, just change everything. No, it couldn't. It's AI, so it could one day.
It's a chatbot.
We have to begin somewhere.
Yes. So, Leah, we've got a script here. If you play human and I will play machine.
Cool, okay.
You go first.
What is the colour of blood?
It is the same as a black eye. So this is a transcript
really
of
creepy.
A chat held between a human and a chatbot. And the chatbot was developed by a couple of researchers at Google. And what they wanted to do was use movie scripts in this case and in different experiments, transcripts from an online IT help desk chat to try and work out if artificial intelligence could use machine learning to respond to questions. So it was fed thousands and thousands of movie scripts and then asked questions, and it used its own brain, if you like, this chatbot, to work out what the appropriate response should be.
So that's quite a creepy and poetic response.
It came up with, what is the colour of blood? It is the same as a black eye, all by itself. It did it using machine learning. Now, chatbots traditionally rely on a team of human software engineers who code it to be able to respond to certain questions in a believable way. So it will be pre-programmed quite specifically to behave in a very specific way. Google system was very different, and it used the machine learning to allow it to work out by itself how to respond.
So we're really listening to the machine's brain. This isn't a machine's brain as tampered by us. This is what happens when you just leave it to its own devices.
Pretty much. It's using a reasoning engine to look at the context of what you've said and work out how to respond. So there are some other examples from this very lengthy and bizarre transcript. And you can really tell that it's based on movie scripts because it's quite poetic. So, on our purpose.
Okay, I'm a human again.
You are.
Right, I'm going to try and sound less like a machine this time. Are you a man or a woman?
I'm a woman.
Okay. The machine's just designated its own gender. Why are we here?
I'm not sure.
Classic.
So on the purpose of life.
What is the purpose of life?
To serve the greater good.
Okay, moral. What is the purpose of living?
To live forever.
Maybe for you.
Well, exactly. I suppose a chatbot could and will eventually kill us all. So finally, on immorality.
What is immoral?
The fact you have a child, which is really threatening seeing as Leah is...
I'm with child.
She is with child.
That's so creepy, James.
Yes, moving on.
Is that because the world is overpopulated, machine? I can't ask him. The machine's not
The machine
in the
isn't
room.
Here right now. He's sleeping.
Okay, I'll have to argue that later. What is morality?
What is altruism?
All right. I hate it when people answer a question with a question. What is the definition of altruism?
If you don't believe in God, then you don't know.
What?
So what you often get with chatbots is they sound very mechanical, and these responses are a little bit odd, but it's strange that when asked a question about what is immoral, it came back with completely by itself, and it's an answer that makes sense.
Well, yeah, in a specific context.
A very odd answer.
What is immoral? The fact that you have a child. So you presume they're talking about overpopulation. They don't know if I have a child. Why is that a good answer?
But it makes sense. It's not completely random. It's just random enough to makes sense. And obviously, it wasn't answering your question. It was answering a question from a Google researcher.
Yeah.
But this machine is able to respond in a very believable human way, almost with a threatening personality.
What do you think the overall purpose of this is? What does Google want? Because this guy is not going to make it in a marketing room.
No.
Answering calls.
Well, that is the eventual purpose of this sort of thing. That when you have... So the other experiment involved very boring questions about I can't get my virtual private network to work or I've forgotten my password. And they reckon that by feeding it loads and loads of information, and this takes a huge amount of computing power, that eventually you'll be able to ask it a question in a very normal, natural, conversational way, and a machine will be able to respond with a useful answer.
Well, we'll see. Because right now it seems to just be being left field just to be different. Just
right now
cool
it's quirky
and
rude.
Yeah, yeah.
So hopefully they can get it to behave and answer questions when people have problems with their computer or want to buy something online, those sort of things.
And to be honest, I think I'd rather it kept this persona or just went down this route.
Got creepier and creepier and creepier.
Yeah, at least it would be a more challenging and interesting marketing call. Or whatever, help desk call.
And terrifying. And everyone loves terrifying robots.
as long as it's only vocal. Right, that's all the news this week. We have a chunky segment coming up for you in the next section. However, Katie, as I mentioned before, is going to be chatting to Jeremy about the new gear section in the magazine. We're getting Greg Williams to talk about Wired Money, which is coming up in just a few days. And Ollie Franklin will be on to talk about Simon Pegg and the Terminator, because Arnie just gives endless joy to us all. And James, I and Ollie will talk about Apple Music and what the heck that is all about.
Do you want a free audiobook? You probably do, since you're listening to a podcast. Audible.co.uk is offering every listener of the Wired.co.uk podcast any book from its catalogue of 80,000, including the latest science, technology and business releases from best-selling authors, just for trying out its service. A one-month trial of Audible.co.uk costs nothing, and whatever book you choose to download is yours to keep, even if you cancel your account. Head to audible.co.uk/wired, where you can sign up in a few seconds to download any book you want. Sign up easily now at audible.co.uk/wired. Thanks for supporting the show. That's audible.co.uk/wired.
Welcome back. So in the second half, we are going to be talking about Apple Music, seeing as that's been out this week. Big, big news, especially for Zane Lowe. First off, we're going to talk to the magazine team about the new issue out today. Now we are welcoming the wonderful Ollie Franklin to the podcast.
Franklin Wallace.
Oh, Franklin Wallace.
He's double barreled.
I'm afraid. Double barreled since being wed several months ago.
Hi, everyone.
Oliver Franklin Wallace. Welcome.
Hi, everyone. Now, thanks for having me.
You edit the wonderful play section.
I do, indeed.
You do. And there's a lot of interesting stuff in the August edition this month.
Lots of exciting things in the issue this month. We've got Pete Docter, the director of Inside Out, talking about that new Pixar film. We've got people like Ernie Klein, who's the author of the brilliant Ready Player One, talking about his new book, which is out next month. Lots of interesting things, 360-degree water slides and
well, that does
all
sound
kinds
cool.
of awesome stuff.
But you're not here to talk about any of that, are you?
Apparently not. No, I'm here to talk about Simon Pegg.
Yeah. You've been hobnobbing.
Simon Pegg. Woo.
Hobnobbing with Pegg. What was that like? What's he like?
He's very lovely. I've interviewed him a few times before, but
so you've got a bit of
he's great. And the thing that's great about Simon is that he's one of us, as anyone who's read his book will know, which has a large chapter of Star Wars fan fiction in it. And he's just a really interesting and engaging guy, interested in technology, interested in pop culture. So we had a bit of a chat about Apple. We had a bit of a chat about Leonard Nimoy, and because he's writing the new Star Trek film.
Oh, yeah,
and obviously doing stunts with Tom Cruise and in Mission Impossible, which is out later this month.
So he has his fingers in many pies.
Multiple pies.
Multiple
yes.
pies.
He's a very impressive
busy guy.
Yeah. Very impressive.
But he made the time to talk to Wired. And feature on the cover.
He did, and crashed a drone in our photo shoot.
So what did he do? Tell us why he was on the cover. What's he doing?
He is hosting our special Gear for Heroes feature, which is our pick of the coolest new tech that's out at the moment. Lots of interesting things in here, which I think Jeremy is going to come on and talk about. And obviously he's got Mission Impossible coming out this month, in which he plays the tech guy. So we figured we'd bring him in to present some of that coverage and talk about some of the things that he's excited in.
What I found interesting, sorry, from your interview, so he is the tech guy in Mission Impossible, but in real life, not so much, right?
Yeah, he's not so much into the whole fixing. I don't think he's ever hacked anything.
So he's geeky, but not that geeky.
Exactly, exactly. Much more on the producing, like writing books. Like he was, I was talking to him about visiting the Star Wars Force Awakens set, which obviously he's sworn to secrecy about. But he's very much one of us in that regard. But no, in terms of gadgets, he loves Apple and Apple Watch and GoPro. He talks a little bit about his love of GoPro and snowboarding technology.
Has he got an Apple Watch?
Well, this was we did the interview just before the Apple Watch came out, so I'm assuming he probably will have done now by now.
I have to follow up with Peg.
I will follow up with him.
And you've also been to see the new Terminator film.
I have.
How is it?
Well, what's interesting about Terminator Genesis, for anyone who doesn't know, which is out this week, is it's basically a shot-for-shot remake of Terminator 1 and 2. It completely ignores the more recent kind of post-James Cameron Terminators. It was quite entertaining, but it's probably the best one they've done since Cameron did the Terminator films. I will say
which
that.
Was a low bar to pass.
Well, what's interesting and a couple of people were saying this on Twitter afterwards is that a little bit like Jurassic World is that a lot of the big films this summer, they basically seem to all just be admitting that films were better in the 1990s. That's basically because they just, like, Jurassic World was the same. It just recreates lots and lots of things. Like, hey, remember the original?
Well, I was going to say, so they're playing on our nostalgia, but is it for an audience that's never seen Terminator before?
If you haven't seen Terminator, you will have absolutely no clue what's going on. I mean, the timelines completely make no sense by now. God. And they kind of embrace that because it makes absolutely no logical sense throughout the film. And there are so many time paradoxes that it's kind of impossible to keep track. But you know, if you like Terminator, Arnie's in it. Arnie's great. You know, there's lots of it, there's a scene in which I think young Arnie fights old Arnie using the magical of ILM CGI. Okay.
That's the money shot.
I was going to say, I'm sold right on there. That. Just
and there's the
that.
T-1000, which is the liquid metal one from Judgment Day, which is
cool. So they've basically just like cherry picked all the best bits.
Exactly.
From
if you love Terminator, you'll really enjoy it.
Okay. No. Well, but you didn't.
I quite enjoyed it, as I said.
More than Jurassic World,
I'm trying
you said.
I just think it's interesting that everyone seems to be like, hey, remember these old films? Like,
can we think of anything new? No. Let's just go backwards.
Proof there are no new ideas.
Which is why they're doing Spider-Man again. But we won't get into
it. Oh, my God. Well, thank you, Ollie, for coming on and sharing the sad demise of culture. No, it's not. There's lots of good stuff going on.
There's lots of good other stuff this month. Yeah. Go and see Inside Out and various other things. And obviously, Mission Impossible for Mr. Simon Pegg.
Yep. And we're going to catch up with you in a bit to chat Apple Music as well. Greg.
Hello.
Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
It's lovely to have you here in our non-air-conditioned room.
It's
on this
pretty
hot
stuffy
day.
In here.
It is.
But I feel that, you know, the chilly breeze of my presence will will help to mollify these horrible conditions that you work in.
Please cool us with talk of wired money, which is coming up next week, which you spent months.
Yeah,
planning.
I spent months labouring on generating the heat that's in this room. It's going to be a really terrific event. This is the third year we've done it. This year we're doing it at the British Museum, which is a change. We've been doing it in Canary Wharf previously. I'm quite pleased about that because it means not having such a long journey.
British Museum's amazing as well. Nice.
Yeah, it's
going to
be an amazing space. And we are keeping kind of a number of different themes. Obviously, it's wired, so it's all about innovation. It's all about people who are doing new things. It's all about people who are thinking in new, fresh ways. We have two stages, a main stage and a startup stage. On the startup stage, we have, I think, 18 or 20 exciting new businesses. Each of them will be pitching to win the competition, and whoever wins that will be on stage at the very end of the day. On the main stage, we've got a whole bunch of very, very exciting people, most of whom have done extraordinary things or are doing extraordinary things. And what I love about it is the really wide variety of people we've got. So we've got Mike Lynch, who everyone will know, of course, from Autonomy, who is going to be talking about a new business that he's invested in called Darktrace, which uses AI and very clever algorithms to detect bad things that are happening within companies.
Oh, wow.
But on the other hand, we have a brand new, they've been going for about a year, a startup from Berlin called Number 26, who it's a mobile banking app. But they just had a lot of investment from Peter Thiel, who made his money, of course, from PayPal. So we've got this kind of great wide variety of people. We've got people coming from Los Angeles, a woman called Shivani Saraya, who is going to be talking about how she is enabling people in the developing world to borrow money by doing credit checks on them, just using their mobile phone data. We have a great talk from a woman called Alexa Clay, who has spent a lot of time with pirates and criminals, and she's going to be talking about how we can learn about disruption from them. Then we have all kinds of other sort of sessions. We have one on Bitcoin and the blockchain, which frankly I think we could all do with learning a little bit more about, because
yeah. Most people know the words.
Yes. Yeah.
Most people don't know what the words mean.
Yeah, exactly. I kind of feel like I might be able to get away with it talking to someone who has no idea what it is for about a minute. But anyone who has any clue what it is, then obviously I'll be found out within moments.
And these guys think this is the future, cryptocurrency, so we're going to have to...
Yeah, we've got people who are building great businesses on top of that, and we'll explain why they feel that the kind of the blockchain protocol could be as influential as the internet itself and the HTTP protocol. We're going to talk about transforming banking via digital. We're going to be talking about how emerging markets, what we can learn from them. We're going to be talking about innovation through design and through user experience. We're going to be talking a lot about payments and making payments friction-free, looking at marketplaces and the crowd, what's next for the peer-to-peer economy. We've got Julie Hanna from Kiva, who has just been appointed President Obama's envoy to entrepreneurship or something like that.
Wowza.
She founded Kiva, the peer-to-peer lending service. She's going to be coming. We have Brian Ford, who used to also advise President Obama on digital matters, who is now at the MIT Media Lab and is a big expert on Bitcoin and the blockchain. And we're going to be talking about risk, because it's all about risk fundamentally, isn't it, when you talk about money?
So
it's
finance is risk.
Like it is. And it's going to be great. So I think we do have a few tickets left if anyone wants to come along. And
so it's July 8th. What time does it start?
9 o'clock in the morning sharp.
Early start and a long day, but a worthwhile day.
Yeah, it'll be intense. I mean, you know, anyone who's been to any of our events will know they are pretty intense.
It will take you back to your days at university, all day lectures.
Yeah, all day lectures, and sort of also mind blowing. There's going to be a lot of stuff going on, but I really feel that, you know, the events are so strong because fundamentally we get a lot of very smart, very kind of innovative people, and they tell you how the world's changing, and everyone wants to know that.
What do you think the biggest trend is, the overarching trend that's going to come out of Wired Money and be money and innovation for the next 12 months?
I think I'm going to give you a non-answer. And
excellent.
Just say, well, I think that fundamentally that there are still enormous opportunities. I think that finance in general is one of those areas that is still in the process of being disrupted. It's not like commerce, which has and media and telecos, which are in the process of, you know, pretty wide changing, disruption. Banking and finance still, it's fairly early days. So there's great opportunity for people. And I think that what we're going to see is obviously, you know, there are some of these businesses that have been around for a while now. We're going to be seeing lots of new businesses that are agile and thinking in fresh ways. And I think that's what's so exciting about it. There are great opportunities there still.
And is it now a case of the developed world learning from the developing world and how it's able to be way more flexible and do more exciting, innovative and useful things?
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely some really strong instances of that. And I think that what we're learning, obviously, is that, you know, with the world that we live in now, you know, geography is effectively kind of irrelevant in some ways. And we are, you know, moving money across through boundaries. I mean, you know, look at some company like TransferWise. Tarbert Henriquez will be there. A British company, a unicorn, as they say. It's got a valuation of $1 billion. It's rethought the way that we move money around the world by offering people much better deals than you would get at your local high street bank. So I think that a lot of these businesses are thinking in that global way. You know, Shivani's business, for instance, she's based in Los Angeles, but her business is in East Africa and Europe and India. So people are using money in different ways. There are obviously local markets and local ways in which people tend to operate. But, you know, if we can get some of those learnings from, I don't know, how people are using mobile banking in India or East Africa, we can bring them here. And as you say, James, we can learn from them.
Because companies like TransferWise have said that these sort of markets are way better developed in sub-Saharan Africa than they are in the UK, that it's a lot more difficult for banks to innovate here because they're so stuck and so stubborn. Whereas in developing countries, they have way more opportunity to do things.
Yeah, they don't have all that infrastructure that we developed in the 80s and 90s.
which we're now stuck with.
Yeah, exactly. And they're thinking about ways in which particularly they can use, you know, mobile technology and telecos in order to move money around and figure out, you know, new fresh ways of innovating in finance.
So for the audience, there's a heck of a lot of great people that they can meet.
Yeah,
and that's half the fun of these events.
You're absolutely right, and I think, you know, not to get too, you know, boosterish on the wide events, but you know, there's no VIP room at our events. Yeah. There's no, you know, velvet rope. What there is just people mingling and talking, and you know, being able to interact and learn from each other. So it's very informal, very relaxed, but also kind of high intensity, if that makes sense.
It does. It's basically our working day now.
And if you can't make it, which we're very sad, but you can follow it all online. It's going to be on wide.co.uk all day throughout July 8th. We're going to be writing about all the different speeches, covering all the big trends. So you'll be able to find out lots about it on wide.co.uk.
So, Jeremy, in this issue of Wired, we've got a special section, which if you look at the front cover, you will see is called Gear for Heroes.
Now, it is Gear for Heroes as well.
How does Wired even go about defining a hero?
Defining a hero? Well, I mean, you've really got to save the planet at some point. and you've also got to invent some sort of new atom or maybe some sort of mineral or discover some sort of planet. I think that's basically where we need to go for that standard of heroship.
Okay, brilliant. And exactly what gear does one need to become a hero and to get to that point?
I think it was mainly because we've got Simon Pegg introducing the entire section.
Yeah.
So he's involved in the latest Mission Impossible film, and a very good sport, and also loves his technology. So he agreed to open the entire section and be the cover star of the magazine, wearing all sorts of gear and trying out the DJI Phantom for us as well. So
brilliant, yeah. What did he think of the DJI Phantom?
Actually, beg your pardon, I don't think it was the DJI Phantom. It was the Inspire 1, if I remember correctly.
Oh, okay.
It was, yeah, so I should know that. But it was the, yeah, he really liked it. It was, we were very worried that it was going to crash it and cost us a lot of money. Because it really is powerful. And what's great about that, of course, is you've got the, you know, it's it looks beautiful, very designed very well. But also, it's got... in particular, it's got the HD camera on the front on a gimbal system, so very steady pictures, you know, loads of opportunities for getting exactly the sort of shot that you want to get. And other than, you know, just having a fixed camera on those sorts of drones, it's also other sort of, you know, things on it as well, like it can land itself, you know, without you having to. So that's the tricky part of these drones, like take off and landing, and it'll take over those things for you. So anyway, so we got him involved with that sort of thing, but it was only sort of an introduction to the piece. Then we followed that with a list of 78 items that the Wired staff, and we all got together, didn't we, and talked about this and asked what we liked and things we recommend. So there's 78 products the Wired staff recommend and love or have come across or have seen and think, oh, I really like that, or I've used that and it's fantastic. So it's pretty much an endorsement from Wired itself, actually.
And I believe you picked out some of your personal favourites to tell our podcast listeners
about. And they won't be what you're thinking, actually. No, we're not talking, I'm not going to completely leave alone laptops and phones and computers and all that sort of business, headphones, anything like that. Although those sort of things are in there. Actually, headphones, we could mention the P5 wireless B&W ones. They're pretty cool. There are even things like we found this ridiculous cube-shaped elastic band. The problem with elastic bands is obviously when you lose them, they're all over your desk. Also, they're difficult to pick up sometimes. It's like, where the hell are they?
Yeah.
These cube things, they stand proud. They look like some sort of, you know, vector design from your old computer games.
Yeah.
And they look really pretty on the desk and you can't lose them. And then they just morph to any shape you want and you put them around something as well. So who'd have thought to actually try and do something with an elastic band design? And that's the kind of thing Wired loves.
Exactly,
that sort of innovation. Yeah. So like, we're going to take something that no one's done anything with for bloody ages and we're going to make it better. And that's innovation. That's what makes something Wired.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I believe you've picked out some items of clothing and that kind of thing as well.
Well, talking about the innovation part of it, or taking something that hasn't been messed around with for ages,
yep.
One of my favourites from the entire list was a pair of slippers. And I'm not quite at the pipe and slippers stage yet, although nearly. However, who'd have thought you could actually produce a pair of slippers that were innovative and really cool? They're not expensive. I'm thinking of getting a pair myself, actually. They're a brand called Mojave, and they're based in London, and they had a tremendously successful year. I was speaking with the CEO and founder about it. He's backgrounds.com. He likes his innovation as well. Mm-hmm. And they've had over 1 million turnover in their first year, which is really not too bad at all, just from like a few people in an office somewhere. But they've just got this great product. And what essentially it is a woolen slipper and... At the back, the heel, which everybody normally destroys by sort of not by just putting their foot in the slipper and just bending the heel back and not being bothered to do it. They've made the back heel out of neoprene.
Okay.
So you can't destroy it by standing on it and leaving standing on it, so turning them into those slip-on type of slippers.
Yeah, yeah.
So you can have it either way and you won't destroy it. Then on top of that, they've made these rubber sort of half galoshes that go on the outside of the sole and up the lips. So if you want to go outside, you don't have to take your slippers off. You just slip these rubber soles over the slippers, and they look really cool because they're bright colours. So the slippers themselves are grey, and then the rubber soles, which you can buy all sorts of combinations of if you want, come in nice bright colours. So it's going to be the grey slipper against a nice bright yellow or a bright pink or a bright blue. They look really cool. I never thought I'd say that about a pair of slippers, but they look really cool and they're really good value, and they're the kind of product that we really like. In fact, they just won the Drapers, which is a fashion industry magazine for the fashion business, they won their footwear innovation award for this year globally, beating Adidas.
Oh wow!
So that's a slippers brand doing that. So there you go. I mean, I'm trying to sell it hard because I can imagine people going, "What the hell is he on?" But check it out. Check out the magazine.
I don't know. I'm sold. I've heard you talking about them, and I'm completely
it's good.
Sold.
Get a pair.
I can just imagine, you know, putting them on and then, you know, pottering off to the corner shop.
Yeah,
and,
absolutely. And they look really nice as well. Yeah. But anyway, so that's just one thing as well. Then we've got we don't want to leave out the gadget stuff as well. So we've got this fantastic thing called the Bionic Bird, which you and I saw at CES.
We did, yes.
So that's got sort of carbon fibre wings. And it actually is a drone, but it looks like a bird and flies like a bird. So it flaps its wings as you and it charges from this sort of egg, which is quite a nice design. So that's a fun thing for the kids, and that's for the big kids as well. Another sort of very useful thing would be a Sonos competitor, like a serious Sonos competitor.
Now that sounds interesting, because Sonos seem to have dominated their specific corner of the audio industry for so long now. So how exactly is it competing?
Well, it's just when you've got those multi-room systems, what you're looking for is, you know, Sonos came along and it's like ease of setup, nice design, very good sound quality, affordable value. If you're going to take Sonos on, you have to tick those boxes, otherwise it's just not going to work.
Yeah.
You've got people doing amazing products like the DVLA Phantom, which is like stonking sound. It's probably the best sound from any sort of multi-room system I've ever heard. But each one of those costs about, if I remember correctly, about £1,600. However, you'd only need two and it would blow your house apart. But these things, so you need to get down to that price point to be a competitor to Sonos. Now, this German brand called Raumfeld, Raumfeld, they've brought out these beautifully designed sort of Dieter Rams sort of designed speakers, and a whole range, including, unlike Sonos, including, so going from tiny little speakers also bathroom friendly to huge, not huge, but floor standard speakers. Something that Sonos hasn't got. So they've got all the small to large, but then really large. So, and all of these are connected. So you can have this amazingly good quality hi-fi floor standards in your living room, all part of the same network, so it all talks to each other. So it looks good, it's roughly the same price. They've got a little bit of USP as well, because they've got this extra level of speaker, which Sonos doesn't have at the moment. I think they've nailed it in terms of, okay, this is a viable competitor to that sort of system. But you've got to remember, to Sonos' credit, it's taken people this long, really, to come and have a go at them.
Yeah, well, that's fantastic. And it sounds like, you know, it's always the case where the more competition that there are in these areas, the more interesting the products start getting.
And, absolutely, absolutely.
And so hopefully we'll see a lot more of them as well and, you know, really see, I guess... adoption will be one of the things that they'll have to work on now that they've kind of cracked the basics.
Exactly. For moving up, like, again, away from technology altogether, because we're not just about technology, we're about innovation in any field. But I found this fantastic cast iron pot from Japan called the Uniloy iron pot. Now, what's amazing about this, again, bear with me. I know this, we're back in slippers territory here, but where we are is, if think of a Le Creuset pot,
yes,
and how heavy they are.
Yeah, they
and how
really
thick
are.
And heavy, and they're great, and you use them because they're cast iron, they cook really well and cook really evenly. Now this pot from Japan, they've managed to make one of those cast iron pots, but the walls are only 2 millimeters thick.
Oh my goodness!
So it's incredibly light for that sort of part, and it looks beautiful as well. In fact, I think it's won a Red Dot Design Award too.
Yeah.
So that sort of thing, coming across that sort of thing, really gets me excited. More so, I guess, when you find products that you wouldn't expect to see innovation in, I get more excited about that, like the slippers, like the rubber band, like the iron pot, than you would, say, in a piece of technology where you're sort of expecting it to be loads better with each iteration.
Yes, yeah, no, definitely.
And then I think finally, I mean, there's loads to see in the section, and you can also, if you go onto the digital editions, look on the website or look it up on the tablet or phone edition. We've got some extra product in there as well, so you get even more for your buck there. But the last thing I want to mention really is if you've got a garden, as I recently have, and it's damn near killing me. what you want is you've got a shed, and you've got your mower, you've got, you know, strimmers, you've got all sorts of equipment in there. You've got to try and shoehorn into your shed, and basically any garden equipment you've got, and powered garden equipment, needs to have a separate product to actually be that, function. In America, there's a brand called Troy-Bilt, and so they've got this Flex system, the Troy-Bilt Flex system. And what it is the back part of what looks like the mower, if you think of a pushing mower, the back part is the powerhouse. And you can bolt on different bits onto the front of it. So you can turn it into a mower. You can turn it into a rotavator. And I think it has 3 or 4 different functions as well. So
why has no one thought of that before?
It's a genius idea, isn't it? It's like a transformer, but for your garden. But it's a great idea. You say, I don't need to have 4 different massive pieces of equipment
and
in
fight
my...
through my shed to get them out.
Trying
not to hurt myself on the various dangerous...
cut myself, you know, cut an arm off trying to get the chainsaw out. But basically, no, this is a really nice idea, especially obviously if you've got a big garden, which I haven't. But, you know, if you've got, you know, decent property, decent land, this sort of thing is absolutely brilliant. Again, it's available in the States at the moment, but there's all sorts of ways these days you can get product over from the States if you really want it.
Yeah.
And it's just a nice idea, and that's what it's all about. So the whole list is full of stuff like that, stuff that you wouldn't have seen, and it's really clever and runs from everything from clutch handbags all the way up to the latest private jet.
Well, that sounds amazing. Thank you so much, Jeremy. And make sure that you go out and pick up the latest edition of Wired now to see the full list and, you know, perhaps start drawing up your Christmas list for this year.
Yeah, with the slippers, definitely.
Yeah, with the slippers at the top.
So aside from chatting about the magazine and all wonderful things Wired this week, in our second segment, we obviously wanted to talk about Apple Music, probably one of the biggest stories of the week. We knew it was coming. It has come. I'm not sure everyone's as excited as Simon Pegg is.
Boy, did it make a lot of noise.
But yeah, boy, did it make a lot of noise.
Specifically, well, Zane Lowe did anyway.
Zane Lowe made a lot of noise. Now, if you don't know why Zane Lowe is into this, it's because he is hosting Apple Music's new Beats One global radio service, which went down, when was it? Tuesday evening, I think, UK time. It launched. No one remembers. Okay. It launched this
week. No one remembers, but it was a big thing.
But it was a really big thing. On the practical side, firstly, now you can get Apple Music. You can get a 3-month free trial, which artists are actually being paid for thanks to the terrifyingly powerful Taylor Swift.
Thanks, T-Swift.
Threatening to withhold her 1989 album from the running order if they didn't pay them. And then it's $9.99 a month afterwards, no free tier. But, you know, that's by the by. What everyone was talking about this week was Beats One and Zane Lowe's, you know, very unique style of hosting. But first of all, yeah, did you listen? Did you enjoy it?
I did. I've been listening quite a lot over the last few days. It's interesting because, you know, Apple made a lot of headlines when they hired Zane Lowe, and they've, from what I understand, have picked up a few other people from the BBC. And it is for like British fans of BBC Six Music and Radio One. It is very similar.
So it's going
to
do very,
very familiar
well
to what we know and
aisles.
Love. on, you know, if you listen to Radio One or Six Music. Or
it's amazing that Apple's been able to come up with this idea. I mean, they've invented BBC Radio. It's incredible.
Well, they think that they can export this to the world. Then BBC Radio must be. I mean.
Well, we were talking about this in the office the other day, Ollie, Michael and I, and saying that in America, listen to radio in America, it's a completely different thing. So podcasts were a huge deal over there because they don't have Radio 4.
Yeah.
Whereas we do. So they didn't have Zane Lowe. Well, now they do. They can work out what they make of him. But
it's
now,
an adjustment then.
It is very, very familiar. And it's very good. The production values are great. I've been very much enjoying some of the DJs, and they've kind of separated it into different shows. Although it does seem weird that kind of first thing in the morning you've got someone like calling in from Brooklyn and on New Jersey and things, and I'm kind of like,
why are you awake?
Yeah, I'm like, what time is it? I don't understand. And they're shouting out 100 countries, and there's a lot of listing all the places.
See, that's kind of exciting. I think its globalness is its biggest feature. So Zane Lowe, in his first hour of his new show, just went on this massive ramble about all the different countries and cities that were listening at that time. And it's kind of exciting to think that you're listening along with people in Chile and South Africa and Australia and the Philippines and wherever.
Unifying.
It's a truly global thing, which is different.
There is also, and we were talking about this in the office the other day, it's maybe I've been playing too much Batman, but it's slightly sinister at the same time. It's kind of really great because everyone's listening together at the same time. So it's kind of like, listen, planet Earth.
Yes. Oh my
gosh. Coming to you live.
So there's going to be plenty of opportunity for propaganda, global propaganda.
Exactly. Hacking.
Which Apple's great
people.
At.
Yeah, it's the kind of thing that you're just waiting for a supervillain to kind of interrupt the broadcast with their plans for world domination.
But one of the cool things that it did show, and Michael Rundle has talked about this in a piece he published yesterday, was that the first track Zane Lowe played was a band called Spring King, who were pretty much an unknown. And he interviewed them, and it turns out they kind of do this as a side project. The guy who leads the band is a music producer.
Not anymore.
Well, yeah, potentially that's life-changing for them. You know, obviously his phone was ringing off the hook from people who were going, oh my God, you were on Apple Music, blah, blah, blah. But it really shows, you know, what the power it could have.
But this is what Zane Lowe's been doing for his whole career.
But now he makes doing a habit. It to the globe.
He is doing it to Sao Paulo and Sydney and et cetera, et cetera. But it does.
I feel like we should do that at the start of the Wired podcast.
Yeah, I mean, we're listened to in God knows how many countries.
Exactly.
So we will now list all the different
we
countries
brag.
And cities.
Coming out to you from Lagos and Hong Kong.
From a sweaty cupboard in West London.
We talk about that too much.
It's significant when it's this
that's
warm.
The glamour.
But the biggest feedback, I think, from Beats One and Apple Music was Zane Lowe.
Yeah.
He was the biggest deal. But it was just Zane Lowe being Zane Lowe. So people shouldn't really be surprised about that. He is quite brash and excitable and shouts a lot and talks over the end of songs. That's his style. And he's been really, really successful for it. And people love it. So it's a bit of a no-brainer that he'll be a success on Apple Music.
Yeah, I think that he's done something, you know, people who know and love Zane Lowe in this country will kind of know what his show is all about. But it does give him a huge global audience. And it does do something which other streaming services currently don't have, which it has that kind of personal touch. It has the presenters, has the energy, it has interviews. You know, he brought on Eminem in the first hour, I think, and that I'm sure that there'll be some big names on there over the coming days. But it's interesting, and what's exciting about it is that it has a lot of potential to kind of reinvigorate the wider radio industry and make other people think about what they're doing. I thought one of the things that's interesting is that, as well as Beats One on there, they've got BBC Worldwide on Apple Music listed up there, and I'll be interested to see what they do with iTunes radio, like internet radio streaming, over the coming months, to see if they're going to open it up to more people, or whether it will just be kind of Beats One Apple curated content pushed to the fore. But yeah. I think it's exciting, given what's happened with podcasts and that kind of revolution over the last kind of 18 months, couple of years. There's certainly some scope for interesting things to happen over the next few months.
Do you think it holds it in good stead to compete with the other streaming services now? Because it's offering that something different, and Spotify has had tried to kind of offer some kind of curated lists and predictive lists, and, you know, to pique people's interest and keep them.
Well, Spotify's got free. 20 million users, and it does rely an awful lot on its free service. But what Apple has immediately is a huge captive audience. So you've got all the people with iPhones and iPads that already use iTunes, and they're going to be promoted at relentlessly with this free trial and an opportunity to try it out. And if they enjoy it, then why the hell wouldn't they pay their $9.99 a month to continue with that sort of service if they don't already use Spotify? There's a lot of people that don't use Spotify and Pandora and Deezer and these sort of things.
And of course, it's not just available on iOS. This was the big announcement that it's available on Android. So the world is about to be dominated.
I'll be interested to see how it kind of takes off over the next few months. I think it's too early, personally. I think that Beats One is an interesting addition, and obviously you've got artists like Taylor Swift on there, which Spotify don't have.
Which no one has, really.
Which is a big thing. I think it's a bit early days to wait and see. I think what will be the real proving point is when the free trial ends in a few months' time, and see how many people are still willing to kind of pony up the cash. Because other than the Beats Radio, the radio station, I'm not sure what else they're kind of bringing to the game. And also, I'm interested to see what Spotify and those kind of rivals do to keep up with Apple.
Yeah, Tidal will be interesting. I mean, I really don't understand how Tidal's going to survive anything.
Much hyped, and it just lost another CEO.
Yes, this is Jay-Z's streaming service, which was launched with basically watching rich celebrities pop champagne corks and talk about how they're going to get even richer now that streaming is fair.
There was a lot of fanfare.
Yeah.
But it remains to be seen how well it can do. I mean, it came along at a bad time. They had years to do it in before Apple was going to come along, and they launched at the same time as Apple, and that's one hell of a big gun to take on.
So unlucky. Well, anyway. Well, good luck to them. Good luck, Tidal. Good luck, Jay-Z. Good luck, Zane Lowe. Enjoy the hate mail, but also a lot of love mail. Well, I mean, he's open to it now. As a global radio station, there's going to be a lot of haters.
So what do you think of Apple Music and Beats One Radio? Do you find it amazing? Have you taken out the free trial? Do you think Zane Lowe is the best thing ever? Let us know. Get in touch. podcast@wired.co.uk. We'd love to know what you think.
Right, that's all we've got time for this week. But happy listeners, please do write in. Tell us what you think about Apple. Tell us what you think about self-injecting flatworms. And tell us how much you miss Michael and Katie this week. And we'll get them back for you next week.
And enjoy the sunshine. We'll see you next week.
Bye.
Bye.